My beautiful ones, we are here, and I'm so excited about it tonight because this is Saturday when we get to touch one another, to ask each other questions. And today, I promise you, this is going to be such joy. And my favorite friend is here.
Good evening, Carolyn. Good evening, everyone. It's been a bit of a drama getting here, but here we are.
They don't call me a drama queen for nothing.
Well, that's true. That's certainly not for nothing. I would agree with that. Anyway. I say third time lucky. This is what I've lost count. But here we are.
Anyway, dear ones, I trust today is going to be exciting for many reasons. First of all, we are having the one known as Simon Peter, who is here in the wings, and we're going to converse with him. We are going to ask questions that you have wanted to know for a very long time. And I find it particularly interesting that we are doing this show tonight when the Catholic Church is in the midst of change, one pope retiring, not knowing what the next one will be, and here we are, speaking to Simon Peter. I find that quite extraordinary. Don't you, Richard?
I find it fascinating, yes.
Okay, now, for those of you who know how we work, I want you, first of all, in your third eye, in the center of your forehead, to see a picture of what you might think that Simon Peter looked like. Call his name, and Richard then is going to connect. He's going to describe to you the energies that he feels from this gentleman, and then he's going to take a message from him, and hopefully you can feel it also. I tell you, this is going to be an awesome night. Richard.
How I experienced him is simply built on love. There is this beautiful, powerful love. Not an overpowering love, but a powerful love. And in addition to that love, there is this breadth. There is this sense of wisdom and understanding and insight that goes with that love. Very fascinating experience. It is this mixture of that fundamental love basis, but then married to it, as I say, this wisdom. And the result of this is this gentle but powerful and very broad energetic experience. It really is quite exquisite, quite beautiful. Beautiful experience.
Oh, thank you, Richard. I hope those in the listening audience can feel it too. It would be wonderful. And so usually a guest has a message for us. And what is the message that this beautiful one has for our audience to listen to?
Well, let us see what he has to say. My dear friends, it has, in your terms, been quite a journey, quite a battle to bring this call forth. And there have been many reasons for this. And they have been, in some ways, competing reasons. Firstly, there has been simply the complex journey that the two of you have been walking as those who were opposed to the unfolding of this time of change sought to, in their own way, prevent this time of change unfolding, and some of the interference associated with that simply came forth at a time which impacted the coming forth of this show. In addition to that, there were some of those who were opposed to this mission who specifically targeted the prevention of its unfolding, and some even survived all that had been done to clear them, to come forth as late as tonight to seek to prevent it, as you both understand. And in addition to that, there were those of the light who did not wish to see my show come forth until this unfolding within the Catholic Church, because for reasons related to the path chosen by that church, I am deeply associated with its existence, even though in truth my connection was not of the nature that has been expressed by that church. But these things gather an energy. They gather their own consciousness, their own momentum, which creates a life all its own. And so even though during that lifetime and beyond, there was no conscious connection, you might say, between the journey that I walked and what became the Catholic Church, that imposition, you might say, of a path by those who followed, that connection in its own way bonded to me. And so this association was formed, even though it was not of my creation. And so I wanted to mention that because the Catholic Church claimed so much about what I did and what I represented as far as creating what became the Catholic Church. And really, there is very little truth to that picture. And I do not wish to belabor that point beyond simply making it to you. But it is an interesting time to come forth and to speak about the Catholic Church, and perhaps more generally, the notion of Christianity as it has unfolded in the world, because really all of the expressions of Christianity, with very few exceptions, are based on that essential model that was, you might say, honed and tuned, beginning with the Council of Nicaea under Emperor Constantine, but indeed evolved significantly beyond that as the Catholic Church gained its power, particularly after the fall of Rome, when the power of the state was usurped by the power of the church. Few understand that transition, but I do not wish to belabor it here. But I do wish to say that if you examine history, you will see that so-called Christianity, not only the Catholic Church, but indeed perhaps all expressions of the Catholic Church, of the Christian Church, have set out to dominate the world and dominate other, what you might term religions, but really I would say it as rather more all expressions of humanity as they exist. I'm not saying it has only been Christianity that has done this, but certainly if one looks at those who have set out to, you might say, conquer other lands, whether it be the Spanish in South America or whether it be the British or the Dutch or whatever, wherever they have gone, they have sought to essentially dominate and in many cases wipe out the indigenous populations because they represented a view of the world, a view of relating to the sources of creation, a view of relating to nature, which was completely in conflict with this powerful, dominating, destructive force that Christianity became. Now, I have expressed it in these terms because it's extremely important to understand these forces at work. and they have very, very little to do with the truth of what Yeshua was about or indeed was teaching to all those that followed and worked with him. It has very little to do with what I understood and took forth. It had very little to do with what Mary Magdalene understood and took forth into the world. But rather, it became a vehicle for domination and control. And indeed, you see this pattern in all of the major religions, where the religion has been built upon the teachings of a great spiritual individual, where the priest class came forth and dominated the teachings, took over those teachings and fashioned them into a vehicle of power and control. And you see this within not only Christianity, but also within Judaism, within Buddhism, within Islam. And Islam, of course, is perhaps the most obvious one in your world besides Christianity. But because you, for the most part, if you are listening to this show, live within what is essentially a Christian world, are told how aggressive and damaging the Muslim model is, when really you live inside one which is no less so. I am not wishing to take sides here. I simply wish to come forth in this special time of transition in your world to do what I can to ensure that you carry as little illusion as possible as to the nature of what you call religion and its almost complete lack of true expression of spirituality. Now, I am not saying there have not been spiritual streams in all of these so-called religions, because indeed they have all had such things and to an extent still do. But these have existed almost despite the intentions and drive of those who have created and fashioned and controlled these religions. Because indeed, they have unfolded in a very similar model to the model which unfolded in Atlantis, and that was that the dark priests came forth and sought to control the entire populace for their own ends, for their own purposes, for their own control and domination. And even though the things that could be garnered, you might say, since the fall have been rather less than they were in the time of Atlantis, still that same model has continued to unfold, just as it did in ancient Egypt, the first real expression of the bringing forth of spiritual knowledge and wisdom anew, only to see it dominated by the priest class. And so it has continued throughout that time since the fall, over this some 13,000 years. And it is no surprise that you are witnessing the decay of the Catholic Church, because indeed it has been such a force of abuse and control and domination. And it is a sad thing that so many beautiful people have associated with this power, and in a way have given it a face of integrity, you might say, a face of compassion, which has very little to do with its fundamental nature. And so you might find my words a little strong, but I wish to take that opportunity, this opportunity, to say these things to you in no uncertain words, because these things are being exposed as I speak to you. The child abuse, the sexual abuse in general within the Catholic Church has begun to come forth. And I say begun to come forth because the depth and breadth of this is way beyond what has so far surfaced. And in addition to that, the abuses meted out not only by the Catholic Church, but all forms of Christianity to native peoples across the planet has for the most part been suppressed. It is beginning to leak out in various forms. And some of those abuses of native populations have not been truly tied back to the role of that church, but rather have tended to be aligned with the country, if you will, that came forth to colonize. But really, it was the hand of the church behind all of these that was responsible for this destruction, this so-called desire to, you might say, enlighten these native peoples, when really what was being done was to destroy their beautiful culture, their beautiful connections with spirit, their beautiful connections with nature, to destroy that and to impose this broken, flawed, dominant system. So, my friends, you are living in that time when all of this is coming to an end. And I know most of you listening to this expected it all to end in a heartbeat at the end of last year. And there were many reasons why that picture was painted. In part because it was set up as a distraction for those forces who wanted to destroy those attempts, when really they could not destroy the attempts. And that is beginning to be seen in your world. And this breakdown of the Catholic Church that you are seeing is just one example. And you see, it is important for humanity to begin to understand what has been done to them, what has unfolded in this world, for them to begin to look beyond this consciousness and to begin to seek out that which is unfolding. And these processes have begun in your world far more than most of you are aware of. And so, my friends, I just wanted to give you these fairly strong and forthright words about what is unfolding and to draw a very clear line between what Yeshua was teaching to those of us that walked the planet with him and what has unfolded in his name on this planet, and indeed to an extent in my name. It has virtually nothing to do with what either of us represented. So it is.
Thank you so much for your words. If we are going to look at Yeshua and what he stood for, in your opinion, what would be his teachings? In other words, if he were within our midst today and was to give a message of direction to us, what would he say? What would it be like to be at his feet listening to his teachings?
He would teach all of you about the brotherhood of man, about the fact that you are all created from the one source, and that source, in essence, the total nature of creation, lives within you. And if you go within and open that door and begin to understand your true nature and the connection that you hold with your Creator, then through that, as you begin to understand it within yourself, understand that it exists within all of humanity. And despite how they might look, how they might behave, they all carry that aspect, that common brotherhood of who and what they are. And in that opens up your compassion for all of humanity, for all of those who walk the planet. And as all of you understand this, and as it spreads across the world, so peace follows in its footsteps. That would be the fundamental element of his teaching, then and now.
Thank you so much. You witnessed many of his miracles, and I wish to speak of one in particular where you and others were in a boat on the lake and a storm came up, and Yeshua saw that you were in trouble and walked across the waters to come to your aid. And I had worked with this miracle. I had taken a particle of myself and watched what was unfolding. And what I could see was that underneath of Yeshua's feet, the water, the particle, the drops of water had turned to hard particles that actually supported him. And he came to the boat and he reached out his hand and asked you to come in the water with him. And you did. In my vision, you put your foot over the boat on the top of the water and the same thing happened with you. Particles underneath of your feet had become hardened so that you could stand on top of the water also. So I would like to ask you your rendition or your thoughts of that moment. Did it appear to you to be the same? Did those particles of water become hardened underneath of the feet?
It is something which humanity for the most part has forgotten. And that is that the mind has a great deal of power over what you take as being this physical reality. And I'm not just speaking about that which surrounds the physical body, but indeed includes the physical body itself. And so there is the ability to, you might say, transform this holographic consciousness that you experience. You might say the reality that you experience exists by joint agreement. And in a way, you have the ability to, you might say, add to that understanding, of that joint agreement about what this consciousness, this reality that you experience actually looks like, such that if you have sufficient power and belief and understanding, you have the ability to transform how that consciousness might express itself in not only your experience, but the experience of those around you. It is something the great yogis have long understood, and indeed the essence of what Yeshua did was taught to him by the great Babaji, as some of you know. And so what you experienced, if you will, with that hardening of the water was an aspect of that change. Also, you might recall he calmed the storm before he came forth and in a sense calmed the water as he walked across it. But also, in a sense, he made his body seemingly weightless. And so it was this combination of things, not just the transformation of the water, but in experience of that consciousness, not only for him, but for those who witnessed it. And it was not clear to those who were watching him walk across the water that, in addition to the changes that we could see, that also, in a sense, he had made his body weightless, you might say. And so when he touched me, you might say, he transferred that expression of consciousness, that change in the hologram to me. including transforming my apparent weight. And my trust in him meant that my experience matched him. But as you know, as the story goes, and as you have witnessed in your own recalling of that story, when he released my hand, fear came forth. My ability to do this without his direct intervention, you might say, was not such that I was able to hold it without that direct connection with him. And so you might say it was a lack of faith, yes, fear, yes, but also at that time a lack of skill, because there is skill involved in this process. So there are all of those threads together. And yes, there was, to answer the specific of your question, the hardening of particles of the water. But there were also these other elements that I have mentioned, because in truth, he was changing that experience of the hologram, not only for himself, but for those around him.
Thank you for that explanation. When I saw this in my vision, I was so excited about this, because what it meant to me is that being a human, that we have this latent ability to make change also. And it would certainly have to be out of love and a certain perfection that we can bring into the physical body. So I would like your opinion, if you would, to tell our audience, is this something that they have developed enough that they can change, make changes around them to, in the physical, to help and assist them in some way?
You see elements of this today in your world with people, for example, who visualize what they wish to see in their experience, seeing it come forth. There are many stories of those who have had severe illness or had severe accidents where they have healed their bodies from those experiences. Individuals who were given, in the terms of Western medical experience, no chance of recovery either from their injuries or from their illness, who have, through the use of faith and changing their perspective on life and their determination to change their experience of themselves, to bring these things forth. And of course, we're talking, as I said, in part about healing. But there are many other elements where this applies. And you might look at this as being really a subset of the ability to manifest in all its complete elements. And I mention this because as events unfold in your world in this time, the ability of a human being to undertake this kind of activity will grow dramatically. Today, most of humanity spend their time struggling to pull together the very basics that they need to live, such as food, shelter, clothing, water, and so on. And really, these things have been used to control humanity for the most part, not just in those deprived countries such as Africa and elsewhere, but indeed in your more developed countries. You do not realize the degree to which most of humanity is enslaved. But the day is coming when the ability to bring all of those elements forth at will come back into the human experience, so that you can bring forth whatever food you need in your hand, whatever clothing, whatever housing. And so this requirement to live in this kind of circumstance will be transformed. And so, yes, it is possible in the current circumstances to bring some of these elements to play. And there are those who have practiced these skills to a great degree who can display much of this today with the current physical form. The yogis I mentioned before are examples of this. Some of them carry these abilities, though most of them who have these abilities do not display them in public, as that is not the intention. But this will unfold for all of humanity as the capabilities of the physical form are reactivated. So, yes, there is truth to it, but it is but a small part of what will be possible as these events unfold.
Thank you for your answer. I also realize that one must become aware what is possible before they can actually work upon the question, and that's why I'm bringing these up. I want people to understand the possibility of what they can accomplish, and that's why I mentioned this. Your answer overlapped another area that I wanted to address, and that was healing of the physical body. You did touch upon that, but if there is anything else that you can add to help us understand how to bring forth healing in their own physical body, are you able to add more to that?
There are many reasons why illness and disease and, you might say, physical disability comes forth. For some, this is connected to their mission. And indeed, they will not see ultimate healing of their physical form until the unfolding of the changes that are coming forth. This, however, is a small percentage of humanity. For most, the expression of illness and disease is simply a reflection of unhealed, unresolved emotional issues. The largest driver of this has been negative past life karma, which has been resolved for some, but at this point for most of humanity is as yet unresolved. In addition to that, there is also the matter of forgiveness. You might see this as being unresolved karma also, and in a way it is. So many people have forgotten the importance of forgiveness. They carry anger towards others for one reason or another, or they carry anger or a lack of forgiveness for themselves. And these things manifest in ill health to the extent that they can cause death in many cases. And so forgiveness of self and forgiveness of all others is such an important aspect of health, of allowing health, of enabling health and healing for most people. They do not understand this. They harbor anger. They harbor judgment of others. And they do not see that those individuals have the right to walk their own paths, whatever path that is, and to allow them to be free to do that. It is so easy for individuals to form a view about how others should behave and then form a judgment towards them when they do not behave in that manner, when they do not behave according to the model that that individual has developed about how they feel they should behave, whether it has been someone that they have had a life partnership with of some sort, or whether it be a sibling or a parent or a child or a friend or a business partner. These things occur. And it is not recognized by most people that the individual that is hurt by harboring that anger, that lack of forgiveness, is the individual themselves, not the one to whom it is directed. And humanity, for the most part, has completely lost sight of this. And so forgiveness of self and forgiveness of others is a fundamental aspect of healing for everyone. And I mean everyone, because without this, on some level, in some form, you have bound yourself. And the physical body will bring forth reminders that this needs to be healed. And if the subtle reminders are not responded to, they will get louder and louder and may result in death, as I said, because the physical body is simply trying to serve you through these messages. It is its mechanism for alerting you, and humanity has forgotten about this alerting process. And so there is such a role to be played in healing through, firstly, the processes I have talked about, but also cultivating love for self and love for all things within your world. The brotherhood that I spoke of from Yeshua is but an example. The love of all nature on the same basis, and the cultivation of peace within, the cultivation of joy within, of gratitude for life itself. When you do these things, most people will heal from whatever afflictions they carry. As I said, not all, but most.
Thank you for that answer. Our time is growing short, and there's so much more that we need to know. We have callers on the line, and we're going to bring them on after I ask this particular question. What was the role that Yeshua offered you? In other words, how were you to serve him with what might be considered his teaching, his church, if he expected a formalized organization such as a church? What did he expect you to do?
Firstly, it is important to recognize that Yeshua and the rest of us were Hebrews, and that Yeshua was a rabbi within the what was essentially a Jewish community. And of course, as a rabbi, he was married, and he was married to Mary Magdalene. People do not, for the most part, stop and look at these things from the perspective of Christianity because of the things that I spoke about earlier. And if one understands the nature of the Jewish church, there are those who, you might say, fulfill the structural role, that undertake the formal teaching, you might say, and the formal conduct of the structuring of the church, if you will. And there are those who undertake the more spiritual teaching, the more spiritual guidance. Again, to an extent, this has been lost within Judaism as it exists today, though it still does exist. And so what was occurring in that time was really, in a sense, Yeshua was trying to return the Jewish church to its roots by refreshing the fundamental tenets that underpinned it. As I said earlier, the churches were based upon fundamental spiritual teaching, which was then overtaken by a priest class. And so, in a sense, what Yeshua was seeking to do was to reconnect with those roots, yet within the context of that time. And it is one of the reasons that those in power in the church as it existed would have nothing to do with him. They wanted to see him torn down, you might say. And I give you this background because it gives you an understanding of what my role was and what my role in relation to Mary Magdalene and Yeshua's brother James was. He wanted me, if you will, to provide the structure, if you will, the formal structure of the church, and for Mary Magdalene and James to provide that spiritual guidance, to teach people how to go within, to bring forth that extraordinary wisdom that they carried, which was way beyond my knowledge and understanding. And so our roles were intended to be complementary in that way. And so that is what he was asking me to do. So there is some truth in the notion that he was asking me to provide a foundation for the church as it was to go forward. And it was complementary, as I say, to the role that he foresaw for Mary Magdalene and for his brother James. And so that is the context I would give you.
Thank you so much. We're going to open up a line. Ivan on line two has a question. Welcome, Ivan.
Thank you, Carolyn and Richard. Hello.
I'm not hearing Ivan.
Hello?
Ivan, are you on the line?
I am. I am here. But aren't you hearing me?
Well, it's...
Sounds like Ivan's headed for cover.
No, my gosh.
Ivan's
oh, you're
it.
There, oh, Ivan. What's your question,
yes,
dear?
Yes, I am.
What is your question?
There is a Bible passage, New Testament passage, in three of the early books, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. There was a conversation with Simon and Yeshua, where Yeshua had expressed to Simon, "You will deny me three times this day before the cock crows twice." And I wanted to ask of Simon Peter this question from the place where he now resides, and he looks back at that experience. What can he share with us about it that we can know and understand at a deep level for our development and our spiritual understanding of that?
Well, thank you, Ivan. We'll find out, first of all, if there is truth to that writing. So let's see.
There was truth to this writing. And it is important, as you reflect on such things as this, to understand that they need to be viewed from many levels. Firstly, that action reflected the doubts that I carried throughout my life. On one level, I was so completely enrolled by what Yeshua was teaching and saying. And when in his company and within his context, there was not doubt. But when that context was challenged or when he was absent, the doubts would come forth within me. And Yeshua understood these things. And there was also, in a way, an aspect of prophecy, you might say, that needed to be played out. You might say, in ways, all of us were playing roles that, in some ways, were predestined. They were understood. And so even though, in truth, I undertook that process quite, you might say, in full integrity, in the sense that it was simply within me to deny who Yeshua was in those circumstances. On a deeper level, I was playing out and fulfilling what had been, in a sense, foretold. And I would not, beyond that, seek to take so many lessons from it. The major thing I would suggest that you focus on if you are looking for some lesson is to take the fundamental message of Yeshua, which was to go within and to reconnect with your own truth within. He was not asking anyone to believe in him so much as to believe in yourselves, to believe in ourselves. That was his fundamental teaching, not to put him on some kind of pedestal as though he were the path to something beyond. Rather, that he came forth as an example of what was possible, and that you, indeed all of us, could do what he was doing if we were willing to do the work. And I say to you, it is far easier for you to begin to open these doors in the energies in which you find yourselves. And I know, Ivan, you are one that is very dedicated to walking your path. And so I do not say these words specifically for your learning. Rather, I say them as part of the answer to your question, which has a much broader application. And indeed, the time in which you find yourselves is a time when that reconnection needs to be made for all of humanity that wish to move forward. That connection with who and what you are, the connection with that brotherhood of man, you might say, this shared creative force that is expressed through everyone. This would be my lesson, you might say, to come forth from the experience of Yeshua in general.
Ivan, thank you for your question. We appreciate
thank you.
It.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, dear. We have 3 minutes. Time goes by so quickly. Perhaps Simon Peter will come again, hopefully. The question that I want to end the show with is this. Many times that message has come to us about going within. It is something that has been passed down to us. There are many who do not understand this, sadly to say. And for those who do not understand how to go within and get information, can you give us some thought about this? How does someone go within and find truth?
At its essence, it is such a simple process. It is simply a matter of practicing what most of you would know as meditation. However, what I would say to you is that most of humanity that have sought to practice meditation have given up because the process of meditation has been placed in a box. You are told that you need to still your mind to be able to meditate. And really, that is not, in my view, the essence of meditation. Rather, it is to have an active but directed mind. It is not to say that your mind will not wander elsewhere, but to have a directed mind, to focus what is within you. And the more you do this, the more you will gradually become aware of what exists inside you, that you are not just this physical being, as you, for the most part, that is, most of humanity, take themselves to be. Rather, there are these energy flows that flow through the physical form that you will become aware of. Some will become aware of their connections to other beings, their connection to all there is, their connection to their monad. They may become aware of their soul or their higher self. And so it goes on. But the key to it is simply to close your eyes and literally bring your awareness inside your physical body and be open to what unfolds. It is rather like going to the gym, to exercising in some form. If you exercise, you will build muscle mass. You will build stamina. It is as night follows day that this will occur. And so it is with meditation. If you practice it, your skills will grow. They cannot fail to do so. And so the understandings will come forth as a result of this.
Thank you so much. Hopefully you will come again, because there's so many other questions that we would like to ask you. Would you be willing?
I would, of course, be willing to come forth again.
Thank you so much for your service. And Richard, thank you for the beauty of what you do, for your willingness to concentrate, to give your all. People do not realize the amount of energy and commitment and dedication that it takes for you to do this work. And I want to compliment you on what you have done. And thank you, dear friend.
Thank you, Carolyn, and thank you for creating the context for it, and thank you to Simon Peter for coming forth in this matter.
You're welcome, Richard, and so all of our friends out there. Until next week, we wish you love, the greatest love that there is for you, and happiness and joy. Until next week.